Hey y'all, this is Kaylin Dunlap with Evan Terry Associates, and you're listening to the ADA Shop Talk podcast with Paul Klein.
Well, hello and welcome to the ADA Shop Talk podcast. I'm your host, Paul Klein. And if you are an ADA coordinator, government official, architect, or accessibility specialist trying to better understand the ADA, then you are in the right place. The ADA Shop Talk podcast is brought to you by BlueDag. Check out BlueDag's transition plan builder and inspection suite over at BlueDag.com. And I got a great guest for you today. This is somebody I'm so honored to have. I've known her for quite a few years, and she's just a plethora of knowledge, and I've been looking forward to having her on the podcast. And that is Kaylin Dunlap with Evan Terry and Associates. If any of you know Jim Terry, great guy, great company. And welcome to the show, Kaylin. I'm excited to have you on here. How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks, Paul. I don't think I've ever been called a plethora before, so I have to share that one with my mom.
Well, you just got a great, body of work, and you've been involved in so much. I mean, you can check out your Kaylin's LinkedIn. And if you don't know Kaylin, you should follow her on LinkedIn or over at Evan Terry, and you've done work with Harvard and you're doing some stuff down in LA. I'm sure we'll talk about, I think you became a CAS, what, in 2011 or something like that? How long have you been a CAS?
11, I think it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, 379, I think is my number.
Yeah, one of the early ones. And then you also have your ADA coordinators certification too, right?
Yep.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Did that in 2014 or so-ish.
Okay. Well, that's great. Well, let's talk about, we'll get into some technical stuff or some, more specific stuff here in a minute. Cause I know our listeners want to know a little bit more about all that, but before we get into that, tell us a little bit about your background, Kaylin. A lot of people out there are, new to this. You remember what it was like when we first started, you're trying to figure it out but how did you get into, accessibility consulting, your backstory and your journey to becoming an accessibility consultant and professional?
That was a minute ago. I mean, I'm about to hit my 21st anniversary here at Evan Terry. So, I was a physical therapist assistant working in healthcare in my former life. And I was just kind of burned out. It was a really good job and a good place. And I always felt like if you did that job right, you were kind of wasted at the end of the day. But that also leads to burnout. So I was actually at a retreat for the Episcopal Church and was talking to some people there. And there was a woman there that kind of planted the seed about, there are people that make the world a more accessible place, because I was kind of toying with the idea of going back to architecture school. Mm. And she said, there are people that do this job. And so when I got home, I talked to my priest and he said, we're in the process of building this new church, so why don't you call the architect? And I did. It was a local architecture firm here in Birmingham. And thank goodness Jamie answered the phone and said, there's this firm right here in Birmingham that does accessibility consulting, and here's their website. And I just sent an email to the Evan Terry general email address. Jim Terry answered it. And I had a 4-hour conversation with him one day.
Oh, wow.
In person. And 4 hours of Jim Terry time.
Yeah.
How valuable that is. It kind of turned into a job interview. And then here we are 21 years later.
That's great. Well, Jim's forgot more about accessibility than I'll ever know. So 4 hours with Jim's always a good day. And congrats on 20 something years working with Evan Terry. And yeah, if you don't know, for those of you listening or never heard of Evan Terry, I mean, they're one of the best, if not the best firm in the nation, when it comes to accessibility. I know Jim and you've worked on a lot of very key, like, court cases, big projects, you know, consent decree projects, large stadiums. I mean, there's just a whole list. And it's kind of nice since I've moved to Nashville, it's kind of nice knowing I'm only, you know, two and a half hours instead of, you know, a flight away to go down. And it was nice to come down and have lunch with you last year. But no, that's great. Congrats on that, Kaylin. And tell us what your, you know, with your extensive experience, you know, working with Jim and everybody and the one of the best firms in the nation, you know, what is one of your biggest challenges when it comes to the ADA? You know, a lot of people complain about the ADA, you know, especially, you know, business shut down because of this, and there's a lot of griping about it. And I know there's a lot of negativity around it, but I like to look at the positive. And I know, but anyway, but I'd like to get your perspective on what is your biggest challenge when it comes to the ADA, be positive or negative.
I mean, for the positive, I will say that, you know, it ensures that I have a job, basically. But day-to-day frustrations, but for people that don't know me, I have a disability. I was born with spina bifida, and I use a manual wheelchair. I've used a wheelchair since, probably about 25, 30 years. It's kind of weird that I don't know the exact date off the top of my head, but I started using a chair in my early to mid 30s. But, you know, so it's really hard for me to separate the personal from the professional.
Yeah.
When it comes to accessibility, I was talking to somebody about this just yesterday. There's a real frustration for me when we can use tubs and showers or tubs as an example in particular. When, just I stay in hotel rooms a lot. And you can have a perfectly accessible tub. And by that, I mean one that meets all the ADA requirements in the 2010 standards, meets the building code and local requirements. But yet, you know, where it checks off all those accessibility boxes, there are still some gaps in the requirements where it's not exactly what I need and definitely not what other disabled people may need. And so it's that frustration is, you know, the standards are great, but there are still some gaps where complete and full accessibility, aren't really met because of those gaps.
The gaps. So when you say a gap, you mean like you could have like the most compliant hotel and everything. I mean, it's got parking, accessible rooms, went through the plan check, an accessibility consultant looked at it, it was built. And then you go in there from a personal perspective. And what is one of those gaps? Tell us what's that like. And
I'll give you two. So if you think about a tub with one of those flip down seats that's at the head of the tub, perfectly legal, allowable. And then you put the, you know, the controls are always at the opposite end of the tub, 5 feet away. I mean, my mom's always joked that I'm all arms and legs, but even my arms aren't 5 feet long. So
right.
it's hard to, never mind having to adjust the water temp, but, you know, trying to get the water set and then transfer and then the, you know, the handheld units at one end and I'm sitting at the other, that's one of those gaps.
Yeah.
In usability that I talk about. Something else, it would be, you know, using the hotels as an example would be bed height. I don't know that you have heard this, but after I saw you last year, Jim and I were in Los Angeles and I fell trying to get into a high hotel bed and broke my hip.
Oh man.
And,
I'm sorry.
Had to do a med flight home and two surgeries later and life is a little bit different. So you know, that's one of those things that doesn't really show up on a plan check and a an access specialist just may or may not catch that when they're on site.
Yeah. I should know this, but I don't recall, is there a bed height requirement in the ADA or is this one of those gaps you're talking about?
No, and the California Building Code doesn't even capture it.
That's right. So. Okay, I didn't think so. I was like, wait a minute, I've been missing this all along. So, I mean, but no, that makes sense. And yeah, some of those beds are super high, and I can see how that's very problematic. And then in the shower, I mean, most people like myself just jump in and don't think about it. You know, for you, it's a process. Okay, I got to get the water on at the right temperature. I got to get back over to where I can transfer onto the seed, and then I got to be able to get the hose or prop the hose up somewhere with a towel or something. Yeah. I'm just imagining what you're going through for and trying to give everybody a visual. And we take that for granted. And yes, it meets the standard, but it really doesn't work, you know, for Kaylin. And yeah, that's unfortunate. And an everyday reality for you.
And then there's those details that you don't think about. Like, what do you do with the shower curtain in that kind of situation where it's a tub seat that attaches to the side of the tub, and you can close the curtain, but it's going to be sitting outside the tub, right? So, I mean, it's a risk of too much information. You know, I end up tucking it under my hip, so it'll at least hold water. Then I have to remember to kind of release that water back into the tub before I
pull it up and
pull the shower curtain up.
Yeah, I imagine you're in your everyday life, you're getting very creative on a lot of different things.
Yeah.
And we get so focused, especially as built environment people are just like, okay, what's the code say? Black and white, and not worry about the other stuff and it's those gaps. Yeah. And then on the flip side of that, Kaylin, and you know this as an access specialist, how do we help guide those gaps? I know for me as a consultant, I can bring up some best practices and some things with my clients that I couldn't do as a code official. As a code official, you can really, you know, you start sometimes. I remember I pushed for temporary accessible parking at our movie theater. They were tearing up the old movie theater. So I said, we need to put temporary accessible parking in there. And they did, the contractor did, but man, politically I took some heat for, why are you making them do that? It's temporary. You know, it's like, well, people still need to get into the existing movie theater. But as a code official, I can see sometimes, you know, there's a lot of pushback sometimes if you go above and beyond. And so what advice would you have for, you know, on both sides, you know, how to fill some of those gaps for us?
I think listening to people is a good start. There's several really good accessibility minded organizations like the National ADA Coordinators and CASI and APA. And you know, having people with disabilities that can speak to these things is very helpful. You know, there are quite a lot of specialists that have disabilities that can really combine those two things and really, I think, paint, kind of fill in that black and white with some color.
Yeah.
And make that human connection. I have noticed when I'm teaching that when I start to tell stories, whether it's my own or somebody else's that I've heard, that people tend to sit up a little bit straighter. And I do think, and Jim and I have talked about this many times, that when you can look people in the eye and they have to make that human connection there in the room, that it is an important takeaway.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I see that too. And if you have obviously it brings more clout coming from somebody with the personal experience than not, but still you can tell those stories. And I think to this day, either Mark or I will every now and then we'll rattle off a Kaylin Dunlap story, you know, and, you know, or another friend of ours is Stephen Twist. I've known him for years, and he, when I first met him, he was on crutches. Now he's in a chair too, but another great guy I can't remember what mountain he climbed. Might've been Shasta or, you know, he's got a great, and telling those stories are, matter of fact, I want to get Stephen, if you're listening, contact me. I want to get you on this podcast too. But yeah, those stories behind when you can connect the reality of life, you know, especially with disabilities, because it's great. You got all these codes and standards, and if you're just rattling that stuff around, but there's really a real life impact behind that's really important. And sometimes that gets lost in us code rangers, if you will, you know, and I include myself in that statement, you know, we get so focused on black and white code as opposed to what we're really trying to accomplish. So that's super helpful. And what, you spoke real quick about, some organizations. I know you've been involved with CASI, and I don't know if you're involved with the APA, but that's one of my new favorite certifications, out there. I spoke about that in episode one, but Tell us about CASI or some of the organizations that you're involved with, and what you're up to with those.
Not super involved with APA. I have taught at some of their conferences. They put on a really good show, and always have some really good speakers. They're a great organization with a good membership. CASI is a similar organization that serves CAS. And that's always hard to say, CAS.
Yeah.
Certified Access Specialist. It's a certification in the state of California, for those that don't know. May sound weird that an Alabama girl has a California certification, but really most of my work has been and continues to be in California. So I like to say California's the home away from home for me. But CASI, I should know exactly how many members we have off the top of my head since I'm sitting past president, but CASI's mission is to really serve certified access specialists, help them get good continuing ed, provide some good support, and keep them informed about the industry.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I've been to a few of the trainings and have taught a few and in past years before COVID, haven't done much since COVID, but I need to get back out there, here soon. And I plan to, I think it's CASIInstitute.org is the website for CASI. We should know that, shouldn't we? I'll tell you what, I'll
if I type in C on my browser, it comes up. It's CAS Institute, CASInstitute.org.
Okay. I thought so. There you go. So yeah, we can, and I can put those, that link in the show notes. So if you're driving or sitting on the lawnmower, listening, you can go check that out. But yeah, no, that's a great organization. Now, did you become, the APA, did you go to the certification and get the APA, what is it? The APA CBE, I think it is.
APA CBE. No, I haven't done that yet.
Okay.
I've been a little swamped lately.
Yeah. Though. Well, you had some life happen too. Sounds like last year in Southern California.
Last year was tough.
Yeah. Totally understandable. Well, I'm sure you'll walk in there and pass it on the first swath, with your experience and everything. I took it last year as well. I went to the APA conference last year and took, it was the first, like, I don't know if it was a guinea pig session or what, but I remember Jim was proctoring it. So it was like,
was the first exam.
Yeah, it was the first exam. And it was bad enough. I was taking a test and I got Jim walking around and going, you know, thinking, you know, he wasn't looking over. I mean, he was proctoring the whole room, not looking over my shoulder, but still no added pressure having Jim Terry walking around looking at you. But at any rate, I was able to pass. So it was, it wasn't a walk in the park. It was, what I like about the APA certification is that it really truly is, I think, the first real nationwide one, because the ANSI A117 is only ANSI A17. It doesn't bring in any of the program access or housing components. And then the CASP exam is great, but it's so California focused that, you know, like you working in Alabama, it really only helps you if you're working in California for the most part, but it's useful. But the APA one is great because it tests on all of the federal stuff that's, you know, IBC, ANSI, Fair Housing Act, that's really applicable nationwide. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a good foundation. It's a long-winded way of saying that.
Yeah. Yeah. The benefit of both of those, I think, is that it elevates your game. So even if we've had people call us from Alabama saying, yeah, I got your name off this CASI website or DSA website, and we want a CASP survey.
Yeah.
Something here in California. Well, we all know that doesn't work, but at least they know that, I mean, our people that are CASP, you know, that elevates our game and ensures a level of knowledge that other people that may not have those certifications may not have.
Yeah. Yeah. I've even seen RFPs for Title II entities require a CASP, even though they're not even in the state.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we've seen that too.
Yeah. Just cause it's got that high bar, it's a high bar and stuff, but, yeah. So those are both great resources. And, appreciate you talking about that. And my next question for you, Kaylin, is, you know, there's a lot of ADA coordinators out there that are part of the ADA Shop Talk community and are probably listening and everything. And, you know, the whole Title II space and that ADA coordinator role is so important for so many entities. And I think a lot of entities, I can't remember the last number, but out of the 20-something thousand entities, I don't think maybe even a third have even embarked on their transition and barrier removal plans, analysis and self-evaluation and all that. But what advice would you have for an ADA coordinator that's struggling in their city or county? You know, do you have any tips or wisdom for those folks?
I talk to as many people as you can. There are people out there that have been through that painful process and have learned a lot about what's good and what's not good to do. And there are ways to make connections to those people. I think the National ADA Coordinators Program is a good start for that. And that's also a good program if they're just getting their feet wet about learning different requirements that are out there. It's also a great place to network. The National Conference is a great place to network and make those connections. I think getting buy-in from, you know, a lot of entities, especially colleges and universities, have things like ADA committees. Mm-hmm. And I think getting good buy-in from that end, from the administration, is also important. And the people that control the money, because they may or may not be part of that committee, right?
Yeah.
So you got to get the buy-in from the money people, too.
That's for sure. I know I've worked with a few, Title II entities from different roles with different companies. And one of the things I've seen, two things that I think are real good is one is when you can, to your point earlier, you can incorporate a DAC or a disabled access committee that has representation from, you know, someone who's visually impaired, someone who's mobility impaired, or different segments of the disabled community, and have them help drive your transition plan and your initiative, especially when it comes to prioritizations. I see so many cities struggle with, where do we start? Do we start with the community center that nobody uses and sink, you know, $1 million into that? Or do we spend $1 million fixing the, you know, in Alabama, the football stadium that everybody uses and doesn't have access because it hasn't been updated, you know, it's providing that big. And I think leaning on the disabled advocacy groups and communities in your community can really help you, prioritize and find what services and areas in the city are you using most, or that segment of the population. And what was the other one? The other one was, I've seen do you know Christy Avalos from Accessology? Yeah, she's been partnering up with a couple of universities where they use some of the disabled students, that some of these institutions have large, you know, population of disabled students, but they actually are using them to do a portion of the survey work. You know, not high level, high technical, but like in Alabama, you probably, someone's going to count parking stalls for half a day, you know, for some of those stadiums, you know, so that's a great thing for an entry level person to do, and involving them in the process. But anyway, those are two things that stand out to me. And I don't know if you've seen that before or not.
We have been part of RFPs and RFQs where they've been interested in doing that kind of thing. We've not actually been able to implement it though.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's great. And and the other thing I wanted to ask you about too is I know you guys have a great resource, but I wanted to ask you if there's any other, well, that one, because I know you know which one I'm thinking about, what ADA resources do you use on a regular basis that you could tip our listeners into that they may not know about?
Well, thanks for that plug, or the opportunity for the plug. I actually every day, and this is not, I'm not exaggerating, every day I use Corada at corada.com. It's actually a resource that Evan Terry has put together, and it's really a resource for the ADA. We've got the ADA standards and regulations and others, the California Building Code accessibility sections, Texas, Florida, And we've got all the federal technical assistance and some state technical assistance in there too. So it's something that's growing. We've connected everything, parsed it down into little bite-sized pieces and added keywords so that hopefully you can search for a certain topic or a certain requirement and have it give you results that actually are more refined than something like a Google or a Bing search.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things I really like about it that I go to is when I get a client that's asking for, I think I just did this the other day. I was looking for, I was looking for some accessible hardware and, so I just went to Karada and I think I typed in hardware and it listed probably, it's not that Karada certifies anything or it's nothing like that. It's just, it just cuts down and gets to the point of when you're trying to find something. I think I was looking for pocket door one time and there was three or four listed there. And so it's got great product references and stuff that I've used it for, as well as all the regulatory. And sometimes even when I do a Google search, Karada will come up first because it's got more of it than
because you use it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
but that's we just, actually do have a product certification under Karada. I've not been terribly involved with that in the past couple of years since we've been working with LA Housing so much. But Jim, you should have Jim on your podcast. He can tell you all about that.
Yeah.
There is, if you go to the bottom of the page, there is an ADA product certification link that you can follow.
Okay, maybe that's what I'm thinking of. I know when I'm looking for a product, I usually just go there and we'll search, you know, handrails or, you know, toilet paper dispenser or dispensers. And, you know, it's got the broad brick, cut sheets and things like that. You can find stuff real quick there. And I've turned that on to architects and stuff. So
yeah, I
definitely plan to hit Jim up here soon. So that'll be great. Yeah. And then I can just go to Karada. It's karada.com, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. C-O-R, comprehensive ADA. I remember it stood for something like that, but we'll put the link in the show notes so you don't have to type this down.
C-O-R-A-D-A.
Okay. And is it a free membership? Is it paid? I forget how the access works on that.
I believe it's free now. I'm not 100% sure about that.
Yeah. Either way, you can go to the link. I'm sure, you know, it's pretty obvious. It's like any resource, you know, you can't have a resource 100% free. You've got to have some support to keep it up to date and everything. So we totally understand that. But I think if you're a member of CASI and maybe APA, you get it as part. I know with CASI, I believe you get it, right?
Yeah, part of your membership.
Yeah, so just
a bit of membership.
Yeah, get a membership with one of these great organizations, and a lot of those will come with the Karada anyway. So that's great. Well, last question before we close out here, and you can be as transparent as you want to or not want to, and without getting any previous clients in trouble. But what's one of your biggest mistakes or learning lessons that you had over your career when applying the ADA? I mean, I can think of times I required stuff, and then I look back, I go, "What was I thinking?" But I didn't tell you about this question, so it might catch you off guard, but. Any learning lessons or big mistakes that you can remember? And you don't have to use some specifics, but just in general.
That's a good question. I thought of one just earlier this week. What was it? Back in early days when I was still learning, not really realizing how the 504 regulations came first. And how they were kind of the foundation for the Title II regs. I mean, that was an important revelation I had kind of late in the game, to be honest.
Yeah. So you mean in terms of 504 being the Rehabilitation Act being the federal standard that was around, and then that nexus between the development of Title II in the early 90s with the ADA adoption?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's actually a pretty high level thing, I think, for access specialists. It's not getting down in the weeds where we typically live day to day. But there's another, I know there's lots of things. I'm sifting through the ones I want to share though.
Yeah, you and me both, without incriminating ourselves or disclosing a client, but But yeah, take your time. Yeah.
Well, the multi-story unit in fair housing, fair housing doesn't apply to multi-story units if they're not in an elevator building. I can't just spout off fair housing requirements off the top of my head, and I'm hesitant to do that even in this kind of situation. But that's always one that whenever we come across a multi-story family housing or multi-story unit, I always go and look that up to be sure I'm understanding that and applying it correctly.
Yeah.
I did that just yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a common, I don't want to call it a mistake, but it's counterintuitive to our code training and everything. Everything's got to be accessible. You know, if it's public housing, it's 5%, it's going to, you know, you're going to have, it's got to have some accessibility, but then when you get into the weeds of the design manual, it clearly exempted the multi-story exemption, building with no elevator. And so those were exempt. And then to complicate it, you're a California certified access specialist. And in 11A, it has the 10% rule, and it has requirements for visitability that came along because everybody in California was building those to get out of the ADA requirements back in the day. So
Is that what was happening? That explains so much.
Yeah. Yeah, the Fair Housing Act, you know, it came in, you know, March, was it 13th, 1991, anything built after for first occupancy with the adoption of that. And then so in California, you know, if you go to like Sacramento, where I'm from, especially out in Citrus Heights and kind of that area that was being built in the early to mid 90s, everything was two-story multi-story dwelling units to get out of those evil ADA requirements. Yeah. And that was happening all over the state. And I forget, it was, SB 1206. I can't remember what I have the Senate bill, but it was in 2003 because the legislator started getting complaints. Hey, there's not enough housing already for the disabled community. And now everybody's building these buildings that are exempt. And so in July 1st, 2005, the 10% rule came into California and requiring visitability for multi-story units that were previously exempted, and which is a good thing. And I think it helped at least get people into the ground floor of the multi-story unit and make it visible and usable.
So is that when that 2003-ish, when 11A came about?
No, 11A was around before that. It was just exempt.
Okay.
Yeah, they were just totally exempt, like the feds.
Because 11A uses the design manual, FHA design manual, as the model code, right? And so then they added that 10%.
Yes.
On top of that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It so from the early 90s, the 91 CBC or whatever it is, all the way up to the 2007 is when the multi-story finally showed up was codified, but there was 10 years that it was exempt, just like the feds. And
wow. So you learn something new every day.
Yeah. That's that 11A, you know, teaching that stuff for all these years and then Sue Mo, who we're going to have on here pretty soon, I'm sure we'll talk about it too, is another great resource and has the background and the history on that. And yeah, it's those nuances between state and federal. It's hard enough. You know, like you said, we were talking about 504 and just the straight ADA. Now you start mixing in places like California, the Oregon Specialty Code that has amendments. Florida has that funky double blue line, you know, it has to have a lavatory in every water closet, which actually is kind of handy. Yeah. but these are all just the wonderful nuances that makes this profession wonderful, but frustrating at the same time, you know, because at the end of the day, we all know it's for a good thing. And if we can help people with disabilities, you know, enjoy these facilities and go on with their lives, just like all of us. I mean, that's what we're all here for, the same reasons to have those.
Yeah.
And I think it's
keep everybody safe. Those details matter.
Details matter. Exactly. Well, that's great, Kaylin. I thank you so much for coming on the show. And if people want to reach out to you, what's the best way to get hold of you?
I'm really through email. I've connected to that all the time. I can I'm sure you can put it up at the end, but yeah. KateDunlap@evanterry.com.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the ADA Shop Talk podcast. You've been great. I'll put your contact information in the show notes. And for those of you listening, check out Kaylin Dunlap on LinkedIn and at Evan Terry and Associates. And look forward to talking to you again in the future. Kaylin, thank you so much for coming on.
You too. Maybe, you know, let's make it three. This is the second time. So.
That's right. We will. We'll do it again. Talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot. See y'all.